Whether it's a Sith Lord, a villain, underneath everyone has a reason for doing what they do. Even if it's world domination, that's a person that's really struggling with something. Yeah, some people love them for the badassery of them, but that's only a little bit of the character. That's just a sprinkle. That's seasoning.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mindful Voice Actor Podcast, the show that promotes mindfulness and explores topics of mental health in the world of voiceover. And today we have a very special member of that world. Yes, I call most of our guests special because they are all special, but this one in particular is one that I admire. I admire all of them too. Anyway, he has been a performer since he could form words, always entertaining his family and friends. An accomplished gospel and R&B singer, he has been affiliated with major and independent record labels. And after a lifetime of chasing and living on that musical road, he changed his focus to stage, film, and voice acting. Please welcome Heath Martin. Hey, Heath.
Hi, Percy. Thank you so much for having me. You know, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. We've had extensive conversations about it and life and the voice acting world in general. So I appreciate you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I appreciate you and just your openness and willingness to be unabashedly yourself, even in the low moments of your life. But we'll talk about that later. First, what I and everyone else is dying to know, who are you and how did you get into voice acting?
Well, like you said, my name is Heath Martin. I am a middle-aged father of five. I've been a performer since I could form words, just like the bio says. I really have. I've been singing to people and performing in front of people since I was about, I've been performing in front of people since I was about 2 and 3 years old, but professionally since I was about 10. I signed my first record deal when I was 13. I chased that all over the world and did all these things. And at the end of the day, it really amounted to a whole bunch of heartache. And the music business was brutal. And I had just finished my album, which is available on my website. Maybe we'll plug that later. I've just finished my album and it wasn't doing, like, no one even had heard of it. No one even knew it existed. So I was really depressed and artistically kind of dead inside. And I built this Batman costume because I needed an outlet and I'd never done like a cosplay before. And I thought that was pretty interesting. But then my wife was like, have you ever thought about voice acting? And I said, no, that's an interesting idea. I mean, I love cartoons. I love video games. I love really cool, sleek car commercials and stuff. Yeah, I should totally check that out. So I looked into it and Googled voice acting and found Chuck Duran and VO Buzz Weekly and went down that whole rabbit hole and never looked back. And that was in 2017, 2018, somewhere like right in between there.
Did you get some good feedback? Because I'm sure when they heard your voice, like the first time, they were like,
dude,
whoa, you got a very,
No, I got the opposite.
What?
So just, yeah, hear me out. So I was very overzealous in the early days because I come from an industry that's very ego-driven, very self-driven. You have to kind of fit into this mold of everything and you have to be great and you have to know you're great. Otherwise, no one will believe that you're great and all that whole crap. So I came in hot. I saw all these like AAA people on VO Buzz Weekly and I started following them on social media and started emailing them and doing all this stuff. Like I didn't have no qualms right off the bat. Like right fresh out the gate, just whoop, I hit them hot. One of my great stories is that I emailed Joe Cipriano, who's a legend in promo, right? And just, I mean, he's incredible. The voice of so many things on Fox and ABC, and he's been live announcing Olympics, everything, right? And he's definitely got that promo, he's got that quintessential promo voice. Anyway, I stalked him, for lack of a better term. I emailed him. I sent him samples of my both music and me doing like stupid, like little bits or whatever. I was playing characters, but there was no real dialogue. It was just me doing weird stuff by myself with no one to act off of or anything. the first series of emails, I sent him like a novel. And part of what I do is I tell people how great they are and how much I adore them and all this stuff, whatever. Don't worry about that part, Joe. And so I wrote him this whole novel and he wrote back. And I was like, oh, he wrote back. And I was so excited. Yes. I opened it up. I'm reading it. So Heath, yeah, you got a nice tone. Sounds like you've made quite a name for yourself in music, but that doesn't translate and you're green and you have no idea what you're doing. And I was like, oh, I was devastated, right? And so I kept reading and he was like, you know, I've heard all I need to hear from you. I don't need to hear from you again. Give me, not for at least 6 months. So I was like, damn, like, okay. And so he didn't hear from me for 6 months. Well, he didn't hear from me for a year after that. That was right when I first started this. Within that year, I got an agent. I got my commercial demo. I got some training. I went and did the things that he said I needed to do. And a lot of people said I needed to do.
Because you need to do them.
Because you need to do those things. And it never stops. You never stop training. You just keep training and keep training forever. So if you don't like learning, maybe this isn't the business for you. No. So I love learning and I love being a sponge. And I went and I did that. And I came back to him a year later and I said, I know you said 6 months, but I really wanted to give you some space because it was clear that I had hit a nerve or something last time I contacted you.
You made quite an impression. And
yeah, I made quite an impression. And I sent him my demo that I did with my good friend Chuck Duran. And I sent him just a simple read of a spot that I also got from Scott Rummel off of a Chuck Duran video, which was an Acura spot. And it was with precise control at every turn, the intelligent CTS-V sedan is designed to perform. Anyone can build a car, but only we can build a Cadillac. And so I sent him that solo MP3 plus my demo, plus a smaller letter saying, hey, I took your advice. Thank you for being hard on me. And he was like, yes, that is what I'm talking about. And we've been tight ever since. I've taken classes with him. I see him at the Sovos and TVO Atlanta, or TVO Atlanta. What's TVO? Is that's voiceover. So I'm mixing my conferences.
He's everywhere, but yeah.
He's everywhere. So, you know, I take pictures with him. I gave him my album the first time I met him in person. He is also really good friends with Chuck, and I'm good friends with Chuck. So now it's like, by association, I get to include this bigger family, and it's been amazing. That was my Joe Sipp story. That was in part my Joe Sipp story. And now, you know, he couldn't be more proud of me.
No. See, and you did the thing that a lot of voice actors do where they think, well, you know, one, I have all this confidence and I have this great voice and that should be enough, right? As you're doing voice work, but it's like, no, you're voice acting.
Right. Coming to find out that the voice is the smallest denominator of the package, like the voice doesn't matter at all. That blew my, so voice acting, little V, big A, got it.
Yeah. And I guess it's one of those things that I didn't think of a lot. First of all, when I started voice acting, I didn't even like, I took one of those courses that tells you like what your strengths are. And I didn't even like my voice, but I loved voice acting and animation. And then I found out that I was really good at doing kid stuff. And then I found out that I need, I guess kind of later on when bigger jobs weren't as easy to get, I realized, oh, I need training. I've done like childhood acting before, but this is a whole different level. Anyway.
Oh yeah. And I had done plays. I had done musical theater. When I first decided I wanted to try this out and act, I talked to a good friend of mine who's really more of a brother, and he was on The Shield and a bunch of other stuff. His name is Milan Rivera. And I love this guy. He's a real brother. And he told me what I needed to do. He said, you know, you need to act. So if you want to act, you got to find you a community theater or some kind of, you know, some tribe. You got to find your tribe. So I went and I joined a local theater group called Act One Theater here in the Seattle area. And I did several plays. I did You're in Town. I did Drowsy Chaperone. And I love being the bad guy and singing and doing all these things. So I got to combine all that stuff together. then I had a higher appreciation of the craft, and then I wanted to learn more. And one thing begot another thing, and then I would start the training process.
That's awesome. That reminded me of something I'm going to bring up later, because I wrote it down specifically. But I'd like to move on to the topic of mental health, because I mentioned when we started that I really appreciate and admire your openness and willingness to be vulnerable on social media and just show the highs and the lows. Have you always been that open emotionally, or how have you dealt with mental health issues in the past and now? What's your journey?
I've always been sensitive. I've always been emotional. I've always been a caring person, but I never really put them together. I never really knew that one led to another or one needed another to function properly. When I started working on personal development and things like, all my life I've had weight issues. Like, I've dealt with weight problems my whole life. So when I started finding ways to lose weight, but then it would keep coming back, I had to know that there was a deeper reason than just you're not working out enough, you're not eating right. There was more to it than that. And that's when I started deep diving into my mental health and my self-image and how I felt about myself and how my world had built me up to be a certain thing. Because all my life I've been a performer, I've been an entertainer, I've been a singer, and everyone always wanted to be around me for that thing. That one thing. And it wasn't until I had a meeting, and this was after I'd been voice acting for a couple of years, and I was meeting with my good dear friend, Jen Henry, who I love to death. And she's like, you know, you're more than a voice, right? You know that, right? And I didn't know that. I mean, I know that deep inside that I am more, but it wasn't until that conversation of someone saying, hey, you don't have to always be so, you know, you don't have to always be big. You don't always have to be so vocally driven. Just be yourself. And that's all you need to be. And all my life I had been taught the opposite of that. Like, my voice was the reason why I got girls. My voice was the reason why I had friends. My voice was the reason why I had opportunity. You know, my whole life since like 10 years old on.
That's and when your voice dropped.
I've had a deep voice since like the seventh grade. I wasn't this deep, but I was still sounded adultish. Let me put it this way. I could call in and excuse myself from school. I could. My dad left when I was about 10. And so like, I guess when I started like skipping and stuff was probably like 12 in there, I would excuse myself from school. And so I would have an excused absence instead of getting marked off. And that was just one benefit of having the voice. I've also always been a big dude. So at like 12, 13, I was probably about 5'10", 5'11". And I could buy things I wasn't supposed to buy. I could go to rated R movies.
I could do all those things. We have the opposite problem. We have the opposite experience. Yeah. I could never get myself out. I'm almost 30. And people still don't believe that I'm anywhere close because of my voice.
You're nowhere near 30. You're more like 17, maybe 19. Yeah. You've got some adult tendencies.
Yeah. Behaviorally, I don't. But maybe my voice does. Anyway, yeah, no, so you've that. Always had that, people have always
I've always had
that
it,
way.
You know?
Yeah.
But learning how to be vulnerable comes fairly easy to me because as an R&B singer, we're always conveying emotion. And that's what every record is about. It's either lovemaking or sadness or loneliness, whatever. It's an emotion. Every song on an R&B record is an emotional one or deals with some form of emotion. So I could always tap into it. But I couldn't look at the mirror and see my reflection and go, yeah, you got it together. So I would use my voice and my talents to avoid self-discovery for a long time.
Oh, just because that's what people would see? Or
right. So that was my front. That was my facade. That was my persona, whatever.
Your wall.
So like, yeah, it was my wall. People would see me and it would look like I was like, mean or mugging, we call it mean mugging, if I was like just looking around or whatever. And that was never it. That was just because everyone for years told me, dude, you can't be all nice. You can't be all kind and no one's going to take you seriously, especially in music. My manager legit told me, you got to be this persona. You got to be real. You can't, I mean, but by real, he meant the hard version of real, like the street version of real, not the emotionally available version of real. So I have evolved considerably since my 20s. I'm a totally different person. I see things differently. I take things in differently. And I believe that the best way to convey to people, whether it's one person or a group of people, is to show them your heart, show them who you are. Because if they don't mess with you after you show them who you really are, then you don't want them in your life anyway. And it took me 40 years to figure that out. And I'm always a work in progress. I'm constantly trying to, and I constantly still fall into little bouts with depression where I gain weight and I do these and I get all, ugh.
And you tell people about it too. You're very open about it. Like, I feel everyone knows your business.
Because I think that everyone goes through something like that, but not everyone will talk about it. And that's why it's a problem now, because I grew up in the 80s, 90s, and 1000s where no one talked about anything that they were feeling. And now as a 40 plus male, I've got all this stuff that is unleashing on the world because it was pent up for years. And I grew up in a time where the man had to be so strong and so stable and so stoic, right? And here I am like, why am I crying? Like, I'm so emotional, but I'm so in touch with my emotions. And I'm sensitive and I'm caring and I'm passionate about anything that I do. So I can't like kind of dabble. I can't kind of do. Just same thing with voice acting. When I got into it, I was in it. And I gave everything I have to it. And I continue to.
You do. And you live as authentically as possible through your craft and just in your life in general.
Well, I think that it can help someone. I think that because I didn't have anyone that I looked up to that was super open about their feelings, that I'm trying to replace that void that I had for people coming up behind me so they can go, oh, it's okay to talk about this. It's okay to have a bad day. It's okay to wake up and feel unworthy of whatever blessing or whatever you've been given. It is okay to wake up and be like, you know what? Whew, I'm not feeling it. I'm probably going to chill in bed today. Let's just be real. You know what I mean? It's okay. And I didn't ever know that it was okay to do that. And so now that I am doing it, I get messages all the time from people, man, that really helped me with this thing that I was, you know, and that makes me feel good because if someone can learn from the BS my life has been through, then that's a win. It's a win for me because I grow from their growth. And it's a win for them because they have someone saying it's okay to go through these things.
I'm not going
to
lie. That for you is very similar to me. And I guess, you know, you could selfishly say this podcast. I mean, one of the things I was hoping to do was show people, specifically voice actors, that the struggles that they face in their career and their life are very, not just relatable, but valid. And that they don't have to suffer alone. And that there are people like yourself, who I consider to be pretty successful, who deal with these issues, but can still have a fulfilling career and life. Which brings me to the thing I was going to bring up earlier, was we had spoken before about how you, I mean, clearly just based on, you know, your voice and your range, do often get cast as the monster, the tough guy, the, you know, yeah. But you also spoke about how even those monsters have their moments of vulnerability. And I wanted you, I loved that. And I really want you to elaborate on just how that plays out in these games. And then how you think it reflects either them as a character and also just what it means to be vulnerable as a tough guy.
So being a stereotypical tough guy can be a total caricature of something, right? So, you know, you got your war vets, right? You got your guys that are like, you know, I've been through it all. I've seen it all. But who is that guy really? He's not just somebody that just fights all the time. He's got maybe a family back home. He's got maybe a reason to be fighting. Maybe he lost his family and that's why he's so dedicated to this war, to this army, or to this thing. I played an orc that was a protector of a village. And so it's not just being a badass, it's being a badass, but also having the heart and the passion enough for your people to defend them. So So when I play a character like that, whether it's a Sith Lord, whether it's a villain, a vile, just anarchist piece of garbage, like like someone that you would on the surface be like, God, this guy sucks. But underneath, everyone has a reason for doing what they do. Even if it's world domination, maybe you weren't loved enough as a child. Maybe you didn't have a father figure or a parental unit that would show you that it's okay to just, you know, want things, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go there. Right. So bringing a little humanity, even to a creature, a demon, a demigod, a pure rage fighter. I play a fighter called Butcher on a game called Shadowfight Arena by Neki, which is a beautiful game. It's a fighting game. And the whole session was me going, I can taste the misery. I feel your presence. You know, like yelling and rah, 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 bigger, yeah, all that stuff, all of it. But at the end of the day, there's parts where he's like, I quieted him in moments so he could really be grounded. I don't know what you want from me. Right? So that's a person that's really struggling with something. That's turmoil. That's a loss of identity. It's a playing in another man's war, right? So it's there's things that I latch onto and personal experience that I can bring into these roles that grounds them to make them lovable, believable. Yeah, some people love him for the badassery of them. Yeah, he's got great moves and he's got cool finishing lines. Like he'll kill somebody and be like, ha, you never had a chance. Right? Something cool like that. But that's only a little bit of the character. A little tiny, that's just a sprinkle. That's seasoning.
It's surface level.
You know?
Yeah. I was curious then, you mentioned about being able to like channel your own self into those characters. Is there maybe a specific character you can think of where you really related to their experience, even if it was a little bit, and the vulnerability he expressed was similar to one that you could really relate to?
Yeah, there's one that really stands out. I can't say much about it because it's still protected, but I play a dual role in one project that I'm in, and it's a father on one side and it's a vigilante badass on the other side. So picture if Batman had kids, if Bruce Wayne had a kid, not Damian, let's go back further when he first became the Dark Knight. Let's say Bruce had a child. So his Bruce persona was a father loving, like he was everything for that kid. But in the dark of night, he goes out and beats the hell out of criminals and does this thing because of what happened to his parents and because of all these things that make him who he is. So I have a character that's kind of similar trope-wise to that, but he is a father. And he's a protectant father and a loving father and a caring father. So I get to be all of me in the father role because I am a caring, loving father, right? So I get to bring that to him. But then I get to be this other persona, which in Batman's case, the mask is the true persona, right? So the bat is what he really is, and Bruce is the mask, right? So in this, it's the opposite of that. So the father is the persona, and then the mask is the badass. But I get to bring a thought of, man, what would I do if this was real, if this was happening in my real life, if this happened to my family, if this happened to my whatever, right? So I can think about how my love for my kids and what I would do to protect them. And I would go to any length to protect my children. So it's not far-fetched, even though it's total fiction and it's total this and that. But it's not far-fetched from a standpoint of how can I relate to this personally? Because I would be a ferocious ass. You would not want to do nothing to my kids. Like, I was going to put that out there, world. You don't want to do nothing to my kids.
You're looking right into the
camera. That's what I said.
Don't worry, I'll be handing out all their numbers and addresses later on. Anyway, right. yeah, and that's amazing. I also wanted to ask, just because I think it's so cool that you get to play characters that, not to put myself down, I could never, ever, 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 ever play, like these real tough, scary guys.
You play characters that I could never play.
I know, but I'm
that's the cold fact. Is there things I have some range. I have pretty good range. I got this guy that I play on Pachki Audio Chronicles who's like this old Jewish gangster.
Oh my god.
He's like super legit. Like I love him a lot. He's super, I mean, he's amazing. But that's the vast array from that to this guy, right? So I can never play kids
unless they're like really timid and they talk in falsetto voices. I can't really do them.
So I can do like a Carl Weezer type character.
Oh yeah, like Rob Paulson kind of.
Exactly, but I can't do like I couldn't be Ben 10. I couldn't be any like cool kid. So there's things that you can do that I can never even imagine doing.
I appreciate that. I guess I wasn't saying it in a way to self-deprecate. I was more going to say, one, do you think that all of the characters that you've played, maybe aside from those who have a few lines, have moments of vulnerability that are relatable? And if so, what's the toughest one that you can think of?
Some of them, I would say no, because it's the way they're written, right? So you can only do, at the end of the day, you can do what's on the page. You can add your flavor to it, and if there's no improv allowed, then it's just what it is. And I've done some stuff that was just written one note, and that's just what the character was. So those do not apply to this conversation. But there have been times, let me try to think of one that had a human moment. I play in a really cool podcast called Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic Resurgence. And I do the narrator and I do the evil overlord, the Dark Lord of the Sith, Lord Tirhar. Lord Tirhar was in the Knights of the Old Republic as like a acolyte of Malak and of Darth Malak. So you don't know Star Wars, so this
I'm
is
like,
for your listeners.
Cool.
This isn't
uh-huh.
for you. So Darth Malak was his leader. And he had a lot of feelings about like genuinely wanting to bring the Sith to prominence, as which is the bad guys in Star Wars, for those of you that don't know. There's Jedi and there's Sith. Jedi are the good guys that have magical wielding powers. Sith are the bad guys, right? Darth Vader is a Sith. Lord Palpatine is a Sith. Darth Maul is a Sith, etc. So Lord Tirhar is a beautiful Sith Lord. And yes, he's evil. Yes, he's overbearing. Yes, he's big. But again, with the power of a villain, to me, there's more power in the quiet moments. That's scarier to me than the guy that yells. So in the quiet moments, when you realize that his cause and his mind is just, he's an equal rights opportunist for Sith. Right? Because they've been getting the short end of the deal in his mind. He wants them to come into prominence and have their own place in the world. And I can dig that. Like, I can grab onto that. I have biracial children. I've grown up in biracial neighborhoods and my whole life. That's been my whole thing. So I know when people need to feel a sense of acceptance. So I can find humanity in him, even though he's like this super powerful. I mean, no one can, like one-on-one, there's no one in our whole world in this podcast scenario that can touch me. There's no one. Like I can literally, and that's it for you. So he's very powerful. But when because he believes his cause is just, and because I ground him in how I would feel about certain things, like with equality and with feeling my people getting their just due, I can tap into that and I can use that.
That's awesome. What I wanted to talk about is, in your life, I know that you have come up with some very useful methods of getting out of your head, focusing on the moment. I know one thing you do is you go on walks. That's a routine you have. Can you speak more on that and if those sorts of techniques do apply to your work as a voice actor?
I need routine. If I don't have a routine, I'm constantly in my head. I'm constantly, what am I not doing? What am I doing wrong? What am I blah? It's not a good place to be. So I like to start my day with a nice walk. I mean, not just, you know, a little walk. I go like 6 miles. So I go on this trail that's really long. It's by where I drop my kids off in the morning. I take my daughter to work and my son to school. and drop them off, and then I go on this trail. And it is so, like, the whole time I'm on the walk, I'm either reflecting, I'm thinking about things that I can work on, things that I could do, or I'm listening to, like, my favorite podcasts. I'm listening to, like, Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, who talks about mental health and stuff all the time as it relates to actors and this kind of thing. So it's very helpful for me to listen to others and go, oh, yeah, I've experienced that. Oh, that's what you do to help? Okay, great. So if I plan my day out, not in our business, you can't be super strict with a plan because things are changing all the time. Oh, I'm on avails. Oh, no, I'm not. Now I'm being held. Now you got this day. Now you got that recession. Then you got, not recession. I meant
recession.
You
know, oh, no.
Yeah. And now I got that recession. Now all my money's gone. All that training. No. But, you know, you have to be flexible. But as long as I have like a schedule outline, so if I know I'm going to get up, and I start doing this stuff before the world's up. So I get up at 5 and start working. And then I stay up as long as I need to. I'm kind of always up. And sometimes it sucks, but sometimes it's great. So I go on my walks, I reflect, I unload any baggage that's left over from yesterday. And then I come into the studio fresh and ready to attack I try to be in the moment of whatever the character is or the thing is that I'm doing. So whether I'm doing an e-learning for Microsoft or I'm doing a badass voice for a BK commercial, or I'm doing a badass for a video game, or whatever I'm doing, I can get into that space because I've cleared out the garbage that was left over from either poor sleep, bad dreams, something that maybe happened yesterday, whatever. I can totally let it all go. And that's how I get in the moment. But I still get in my head even when I'm recording. I'll start a take and I'll be like, oh, that sucked. And then I'll start over. Oh, wait, that last one might have been better than that one. Oh, that one sucked. And then I start over. And I don't just clip a line and punch and roll. I delete the whole take and start over.
Me too. As I've told
you. I'm super before. Like, I can do that. I can do it better. I can do it better. I can do it better. But I've also learned in sessions, when I'm with a director and I'm going through and we're doing a video game and stuff, and I'm like, I can do that better, but they're saying, that's great, we got it, let's move on, I just shut the hell up and let it happen.
Same, which doesn't that just show how much we overthink? Because they love it.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh, but I could do better. It's like, it doesn't matter.
We are our own worst critic and our own biggest advocate at the same time. So we want to present the best thing for everyone. And we know that I got another one in me. I got it. No, no, you don't. You don't have another one in you. Sit down. Be thankful that you're done.
Okay. Take your money and leave.
Yeah, that's right. Take your money and run. Like, why do I want to drag out a commercial? Commercial sessions are great. I can go into, I did a BK session where I went in and it's commercials, good money, right? First of all, so that's helpful.
TV commercial?
Oh, yeah. Well, all media. So you go in, you do the thing. It took you 15 minutes to do. I mean, let's be honest. I've done sessions that I got paid $1,000 for that took me 15 minutes to do. That's just...
It's the best.
That is an amazing... And I'm grateful for days like that. It's not all like that. No, 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 no. Especially if you do anime or if you do like audiobooks where it's pay by the whatever... By the line or by the word or by the any count type payment. No, I don't like those too much. But every once in a while, you get a session that's a total blessing and it makes you go, oh, wow, I've really done a lot to get to the point where I can do this type of thing. And so that's never lost on me. The gratitude that I learned from the day I came into this business that stays with me to this day to wake up and go, okay, what am I grateful for? And it doesn't have to be like, oh, I booked this game and I'm, yay, people know who I am. No. You woke up today. That's one. Okay, that's a good thing. You have a roof over your head. That's a good thing. Your lights are on. Your internet is on. You can actually do your work. That's a good thing. So I try to find little things that I'm grateful for throughout the day. And that's what I do on my walks too. I look at the beautiful scenery. I look at the river running next to me. I look at the trees. I look at the fog. I look at the you know, little animals, the birds. I've got goats and things and sheep on my walk.
Oh, wow. And
I,
what?
Yeah. I mean, like, live, like right. I mean, they're behind this fence and I can't like go pet them or anything, but they're literally just chilling right on the side of the walking trail.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I'll revel in that. I love nature. I love being outside. I love the calming peace of fresh air and activity.
Especially right before you go into this little isolated padded booth and talk to yourself for who knows how long and potentially not make any money, because a lot of times you're just hoping that someone likes it.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time and I still do pro bono projects. I mean, don't get it twisted. I will always do stuff for people that like my friends and things that have a production or whatever. I'll do those things because I enjoy them. I like to stretch and play and be with my friends, but it's also nice to get paid for what you love doing too. So the business side of me is like, yeah, we got to do this business wise. But the fun play side of me is I'll do this for fucking free. Just don't tell my agents.
I was referring more to auditions where you don't even know whether or not, you know, this is
Oh, but the audition's the job. So if the audition is the job, then you go into each audition like it's you're doing the work for the producer and all the people. Then, A, you're going to give your best performance. Right? Because it's not going to be all, oh, here we go again. Should I name the name? I don't know if I should name the name.
I can cut it out. You can decide later.
Okay. I've auditioned for like 150 times. They're a video game developer. I've auditioned for them countless times. I've never booked. Not once. And every time I get that audition, that thought occurs, should I even do this audition? And then I go, yeah, I'm going to do this audition. And then I forget that they've never hired me. And then I make the audition the job. And then I just do my best and then forget it. There was a time when I got an audition for a thing. And I was like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do this audition. I don't know. Oh, man. But then I was like, but I've been doing this my whole life. Example, I've been a singer my whole life. I've been a singer my whole life. So I grew up with music. I grew up around certain musicians. And I got an opportunity to be a stand-in voice double for Lionel Richie for the general car insurance. And I was like, I'm not going to do this. It has Shaq and then it's got Lionel Richie singing Hello. And then it's, so I said, you know what, Heath, you grew up singing this song. You're authentic. As long as it comes from a place of authenticity, you shouldn't have a problem doing this audition. So I went ahead and did the audition and I booked it. So the lesson is, even when you think, yeah, maybe this isn't for me, maybe do it anyway and then see what happens. But there's also something to be said for being at a place where I can be like, that's definitely not my wheelhouse. I'm going to pass. There are certain things. If you just know you can't, like, I know I can't sustain like an Australian accent, a dialect. I can do one for a hot minute. I might be able to do one for an audition, but I couldn't sustain one for a full project. So I don't do it. I'm not going to put myself in a position to where they can go, nah, this guy is full of shit. Like, we shouldn't hire him.
Yeah. When it comes to very specific skills that take time to acquire, that's very different than like, you know, put yourself into it. Don't think about what other people are doing. It's like, no, if other people know this language and you don't, and that's a requirement, don't do it.
And if it's nondescript, sure, I'll do it. But if it's like, no, you have to sound like you're actually from there, then no. I won't do it. As hard as it is to pass on any, because we're so greedy. We want it all. Give me all of it. Give me all your little awesome projects.
See, I mean, that would be great if I had that same sort of confidence in myself and just stepping back from myself and who I am / used to be. It's such a hard thing when you're so used to being self-critical and you're so used to telling yourself, like, don't even bother. But I've been doing that a lot more in my life recently when it comes to making sure I get enough sleep, where I'm usually like, oh, it'll be fine. I'll survive on this much sleep. And now the evolved approach is like, it won't be fine. It's never, it's literally never fine. And it's just like, oh, shit. there's that perspective that's, it's because I'm older, more experienced. Who knows?
It's the self-talk for me. I'm constantly my biggest fan. I'm constantly my biggest supporter, but I'm also my biggest critic. So if you can find a balance and tell the critic to shut up once in a while. It's not bad all the time because it drives you to be great. It drives you to be better. It drives you to find out how to find your niche, how to get in there, how to get the training, how to whatever. So it's not always a bad thing. But when you're talking negatively, oh, you can't, or you suck, or you blah, 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 you didn't, that's got to get that shit out of there. That's the stuff that'll get you.
Imagine if you're in a session with a director. It's like they're giving you good critiques on like what you need to improve. And then they just start telling you that you like suck. That?
I thought I really sucked.
And it's just like,
what?
Excuse me? Like, is this who, like,
yeah,
like they would never.
And no one wants to work with a Debbie Downer either.
No, I mean, yeah, whether it's them or it's you. And, you know, as easy as it is to be self-deprecating and, you know, I say, well, I'm Jewish. That's our culture. But, you know, at least that comes with a sense of like you're funny and talented.
It's interesting that you say that because I was listening to Inside of You on my walk yesterday and Zach Braff. Right. What's the guy's name from Scrubs?
From Scrubs. Zach Braff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. He was on it and he was talking about how when he first came out, he just thought he was a neurotic Jew from the East Coast, and that's how he was supposed to sound, and that's what he was supposed to do, and that's how he was, you know, because, you know, he grew up watching Mel Brooks, and he grew up watching Woody Allen. He grew up watching Woody Allen. Woody Allen is the quintessential, oh, we got to do this thing. We got to know what I'm going to do, and his hands are always, and he was like, I just thought that's how it's supposed to be. Come to find out, he had a lot of internal things that he had to work through. He had some therapy that he needed to have. He needed to let go of certain things and hold on to other things. And it's all part of the process of discovering who we are, right? So we discover who we are, and then we learn what works for us and what doesn't work for us. We try to avoid the stuff that doesn't work and gravitate to the stuff that does work while implementing it into our whatever it is we're doing.
And skillfully, like, you know, we can accept who we are, but having the skills to then take that and make it a product that people either want to buy or something that we can be proud of is, for me, if I'm feeling really depressed and I got to do some very happy, joyous audition or gig, it's really hard. But sometimes I have to be like, hey, inner child who is like excitable and enthusiastic and just wants to like have fun, I need you right now. I'll guide you through the acting part, but like, I'm going to need you to take the lead when it comes to the attitude and just kind of accepting that and not trying to like fake your way through it. But really, like with anything, you want to put yourself into it, even if that part of yourself that you're tapping into feels very lost, both maybe in your emotional state and perhaps in time, because plenty of people suppress their inner child when it comes to their needs and emotions. But I'm always an advocate for playing. If you're an adult, obviously improv being a way to do that, just being able to use your imagination and have fun. But like in those moments of severe depression where you gotta do this work and it can be so hard, and you just have to like look inside yourself, be like, hey, how are you? Could you help me right
touch
now?
Touch base and, with yourself and yeah. I need you. I need you.
What I wanted to ask is for you, when you're having really, really rough days and you have to play characters or do any sort of gig that requires the opposite emotion and attitude, how do you prepare yourself? And that concludes part one of my interview with Heath Martin. Join us next time as we continue our conversation in part two. And now, I leave you with this. If you have no confidence in self, you are twice defeated in the race of life. With confidence, you have won even before you have started. Marcus Garvey. And with that, I'll see you next time.